If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that I'm a big fan of connecting with locals when you're traveling someplace. If you're just going to be inside the tour bus, then you might as well stay home. The best parts of travel for me are when you get out into the marketplace or into the cafe where you meet the locals and have a chance to interact. If you're also looking to experience this, then check out Explore Worldwide, whose local tour leaders will get you off the beaten track and into the heart of the adventure, helping you get past being a tourist, experiencing local culture, and finding places you would not find by yourself. And isn't that what travel is all about? If you're thinking about your next adventure, head to exploreworldwide.com to find out more.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 860. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about glaciers and fjords, polar bears and reindeer, kayaks, coal, and the global seed vault as we go to the Svalbard Archipelago in Norway. This is Chris Christensen from the Amateur Traveler. Let's talk about Svalbard. I'd like to welcome the show Cherry Gonzalez from itscherrygonzalez.com, who's come to talk to us about Svalbard. Cherry, welcome to the show.
Hi, Chris. Yes, thank you so much for having me here.
And I say you've come to talk about Svalbard, and there's at least two or three people who are listening who have no idea where we're talking about. Can you put it on a map for us?
Yeah, just a little bit of background about Svalbard for anyone that hasn't heard about it. It's a Norwegian archipelago in the Arctic Ocean. And it's in between the mainland Norway and the North Pole. So we are at 78 degrees north, around 1,300 kilometers from the North Pole. And it's the world's northernmost community with a population of 2,500 as of May 2023.
And that 2,500 includes you. We want to talk about that, how you ended up there, because you are not from Svalbard. You did not grow up or were not raised there, I'm assuming.
No, I was born and raised in the Philippines, and I have always wanted to explore the world. So what I did is I worked as a chef in cruise ships before I actually ended up here in Svalbard.
Okay.
And the moment that my feet touched the ground and just saw the surroundings, I was really captivated by it. The moment that you first saw it, it just feels very unique. So it has a very peaceful and a calming vibe.
So you were not drawn to the tropical weather of Svalbard?
No, at first, I was just like, what am I even doing? It's like tropical country to the Arctic. I was like, I don't know if I'm even prepared for the cold.
And why should somebody go to Svalbard?
Someone should go to Svalbard if you are adventurous and you love being outside and you want to experience the natural beauty and just really connect with nature without any interruptions, then Svalbard is really the perfect destination for you. It has new landscapes, new experiences. In the summer, you'll experience midnight sun, and then in the winter, you'll experience polar night. And the nature is literally outside your door. Like the apartment where I live right now, it's 2 kilometers away from the center of the town, but it's less than a kilometer walk and you're already at the start of the trail that goes to a glacier, goes to an ice cave and all that.
Two things I noticed you said there. One is you said nature is just outside your door. Of course, nature may be a polar bear, so I'm not sure how close I want nature to be sometimes. And then you said the town. there is the town in Svalbard.
Yeah, because actually Svalbard, we have 5 settlements.
Okay.
And Longyearbyen is the biggest settlement. This is where most of the people live.
Okay.
And so that's the town that I was talking about. And it's a little bit big, not super big as the other towns, but the place that most of the people live near the center. And I'm a little bit further, 2 kilometers away from the center of the town.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm a little bit near the foot of the mountain. I know for a lot of people that heard about Svalbard, they hear about, oh, Svalbard has more polar bears than people. There are like 3,000 polar bears. So I would just want to say that it's half true and half not, because in Svalbard, there are only 300 in the Svalbard archipelago, 300 polar bears. But if you would count the one that is in the Barents Sea and in the Arctic edge, then that is around 3,000 polar bears. But not really in the settlements.
not next door. Okay.
No.
So what kind of itinerary are you going to recommend for us?
It really depends on what time of the year you come up here, because we have 3 official seasons. We have like summer months that goes from mid-May through September. And then we have the winter months that is from October through March, and then spring, which is from March through mid-May. And since we are in summer season right now, I have prepared. It's not a week itinerary because it depends on how much activity you want to do and how much budget you have. So let's say if you've decided to do 3 activities, you need to stay here at least 5 days because most of the activities starts very early. And you are more or less outside the whole day.
Okay. And do you have a recommendation which season people should come?
For me, I think the best one is during the spring months, because then you still have a little bit of activities that you could do from the winter season, but also then you already have a little more freedom because of the daylight. Because during winter months, it's totally dark. For 3 months,
sure,
you can,
right.
Yeah. So, so during spring, you can do hiking, you can do skiing, you can go snowmobiling, and it's further away from the town, and lots of different activities. But if you come here during summer, because that's most of the people comes up here, that's actually our busiest season here during the summer, then there are still a lot of activities that you could do. But it's more of very physical activities like hiking. And there are a lot of different mountains that you can go to or different activities that you can go to. We have what we call the Arctic Challenge. It's 10 hours of being outside. Okay. From Longyearbyen, you have to kayak first to the mountain that is on the other side of the town. And that's what we call Yorkfjellet. And then from there, you can hike up the mountain, which is like 1,000 meter high. And then from there, you can see the view of just the entire town. So it's really a majestic view, but activities, it's a little bit tough terrain. So yeah, if you are staying here for, let's say, 5 days, so for day one, it depends. Normally the flight arrives in the afternoon or in the nighttime. So if you arrive in the afternoon, then you can just go for a walk in the evening or before you go to dinner. You can just walk around town. You can see the church. You could see the cemetery that we have here, but no one is buried there anymore. And then you could go up to our governor's office, and there's an old coal cart there, and there's a good view of the port and the fjord. When I say fjord, it's I don't know how it is in English. But yeah.
Fjord is the word we use in English.
Oh, okay. Oh, sorry. Because it's spelled as F-J-O-R-D in Norwegian.
Yes,
and I was like, I always forget. Oh, okay. I'm mixing English, my language in Filipino, and Norwegian. So
no, we stole that one from the Norwegians.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So that you can do on day one when you arrive. And then on day two, you wanted to make...
But before we get to day two, a couple questions. One, you said the flight. So I'm flying in through Oslo, I'm assuming?
Yes. If you come from outside Norway, You'll fly from Tromsø. It's the last stop before it goes up here in Svalbard. Yeah. But sometimes people also just fly from Tromsø because they are already in Norway. So it's a 90-minute flight from Tromsø. But if you are from Oslo, it's around 3 hours.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah. Yeah. And on day two, if you wanted to take it easy on the first full day in Svalbard, you can go on town sightseeing in the morning. You can go to museums because we have Svalbard museums here. And then we also have North Pole Expedition Museums. The North Pole Expedition Museum, I think, is one of the sightseeing that people kind of miss because it's not in the center of the town. But it's a very interesting museum if you're interested in exploration history. So you could learn about expeditions to the North Pole that have departed from Svalbard.
Okay.
So it has like large collection of newspaper clippings and posters, and there are a lot of informations there. And then in Svalbard Museum, of course, there you could learn about the history, geology, and the wildlife of Svalbard.
And you say geology, and you mentioned a coal cart. So one of the reasons there are people up in Svalbard is the mining.
Yes. Originally, Longyearbyen is a mining town. It was discovered by this American businessman. His name is John Longyear. And so he established this as a mining town, and he called the settlement Longyear City. But in 1916, around 1916, I think, the Store Norske Spitsbergen Coal Company took over the mining operations. And then the settlement was renamed to Longyearbyen. But it was John Munro Longyear that established the first mine here in Longyearbyen.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
And we talk about the town. If I were to walk from one end of the town to the other, to the far end, it's going to take me about 5 minutes. Is that about right?
Not really. If it's from just the center of the town, yeah, it's just 5 minutes around that time. But if you want to walk around town, visit all the other buildings, the old churches, the old hospitals, and then the schools, then it will take you roughly around an hour and a half to 2 hours to actually walk around town and be back.
To explore the town. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
And then in the afternoon of your day two, you can join a sightseeing tour, either through bike or walking tour, or we also have a taxi tour. So there's plenty of choices, and this is around 3 to 4 hours. So,
and are there multiple different tour operators in Svalbard, or is it just Sven?
We actually do have a lot of tour operators here in Svalbard. Okay. We have more or less 5 companies. We have Hurtigruten, Svalbard.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, we have Svalbard Adventures. We have Svalbard Wildlife Expeditions. And we have, what else do we have? We have a little more than that, but that's what I know of because that's the most recommended companies.
Okay, that's good. Is there one of those we should go to when people come visit you?
I used to work for Svalbard Adventures, so when I was working with them, if I have visitors, I just book it with them. And then recently I was with Hurtigruten Svalbard, so I got discounts with them and also their friends and family. So that's why I go with them.
Fair enough. Now, does Hurtigruten, the cruise company, come all the way up to Svalbard?
Yeah, I think they have around 3 boats that comes up here during summer. But then they also have a separate, Hurtigruten Svalbard is, I think, is a company under.
Subsidiary company.
Yeah. But it operates separately from main Hurtigruten. So for Hurtigruten Svalbard, it's mostly just within the area. It offers boat trips, hiking trips, all the other experiences that is focused in Svalbard.
And then you mentioned a couple different options there. Which one would you recommend, or which one would you recommend to different people? I should take the taxi tour if...
Okay. Actually, the taxi tour and the biking tour, you can go all the way to the seed vault or to the mining. It goes up in the mountain because you have a bike and you have a taxi. And if it's a walking tour, it's a little bit hard for the people to do that. It's a hiking thing already. We recommend bike or a taxi tour if you want to go to the mining. We call it Gruva 3. It used to be active, but now they've ceased the operation maybe just a year ago or two. I'm not really sure. But then you could also visit the Global Seed Vault. I don't know if you've heard about it.
I knew that Norway had a Global Seed Vault. I did not realize it was in Svalbard. So tell people what you're talking about.
Yeah, so the Global Seed Vault is here in Svalbard, and it has 2.5 billion seeds. And this is the world's safety net in case of global disasters. And then almost 1 million different type of seeds are safely stored beneath the permafrost. Mm-hmm. And actually, thing is, you cannot really go inside, but you could take a picture outside by the door.
Okay.
Yeah.
I could see why they might want to limit the number of people who are going inside. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very delicate. Yeah. We also have here a gallery where you can see the Longyearbyen's Arts and Crafts Center. It's here where I live. It's 20 minutes away from the town, but it's where you can find the local artists' crafts and some paintings and pictures and photographies and all that.
Got it. And what else are we doing? Your first recommendation was all outside.
Yeah, okay, because Svalbard is mostly, it's for outdoor people.
Yep, okay.
Yeah, so most of the activities here are mostly outdoors, like hiking, snowmobiling, boat cruise, and all those outdoor stuff, skiing.
So you mentioned hiking, and you mentioned the Arctic Challenge, where we go kayak across the fjord and then go hike up the mountain for a view. Is that one of your favorite hikes, or what's your favorite hike in the area?
My favorite hike in the area is going to Plettafjallet, because it's a little bit less challenging than kayaking first, and it's like 10 minutes walk from where I live, and I could start the trail. And from up there, you will have a bird's eye view of the whole town. It's a good short hike, so to speak.
And I feel this is a photo that I have seen many times on the internet, this spectacular view of this fjord.
Oh, yeah. If you are up in the Plettafjallet, you would have a view of the town and then the Adventfjorden, that's the fjord that you see on the picture. And then actually the backdrop, the mountain that you see on that picture, that's the Hjortfjellet. That's where you're going to hike if you decide to do the Arctic Challenge. Yeah.
Okay. ButcherBox is sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler, and I just got my first ButcherBox. I've got packed with dry ice came 4 packets of ground beef, 3 packets of chicken breasts, 2 steaks, some pork ribs, and some sirloin tips. Now, I've got a great recipe for what to do with the chicken. At least one of those packets of chicken is going to become Greek chicken and rice. And if you go to chris2x.com, I've got a recipe there that's an Instant Pot recipe. But I'm not good with steak, and so I'm going to take advantage of the fact that ButcherBox has recipes on their site at butcherbox.com to learn some great recipes to do with those steaks. You can have ButcherBox deliver meat to your doorstep. Free shipping as always, curated to custom box plans. You can easily find high-quality meat and seafood you can trust. 100% grass beef, free-range organic chicken, pork-raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. Humanely raised, no antibiotics or added hormones. Also like the fact that I could recycle all the box and shipping material that they sent. Sign up at butcherbox.com/traveler and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off. Choose salmon, chicken, breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/traveler. If you got recipes for ribs or steaks, send them my way as I send my thanks to ButcherBox.com for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler. And then you mentioned boat cruise. how much more of the islands do I get to see on the boat cruise?
On a boat cruise, it's not really going on different part of the archipelago because that is more for expeditions. If you're joining a multi-day expeditions, that's the only boat that goes to different parts of Svalbard. But we do have shorter boat trips that starts from Longyearbyen. You can go on an East Fjord safari or a glacier safari. And you could also go to Pyramiden or to Barentsburg by boats. So Pyramiden and Barentsburg is one of the five settlements, two of the five settlements, largest settlements here in Svalbard.
And then you mentioned expeditions are also an option if I have more time.
Yeah, if you have more time, we have different boat expedition crews that goes around Svalbard, and that is where the Hurtigruten ships goes. So they go around the Svalbard archipelago.
Got it. So this is one of their expedition ships, not their usual run up the Norwegian coast ship.
No, it's really ships that is built to go around the Svalbard because the climates here is very different and it's hard to predict. In the morning, you might have a very sunny weather, and then a few hours later, it's just clouds starting to really just form, and all of a sudden, it's very windy. So that's why you need to have special expedition boats to go around the Svalbards.
Okay. And is that going to be one of my best ways to encounter the wildlife on Svalbard?
For the wildlife, actually, if you want to come up here and just see a polar bear or just really for wildlife, yes, that's the best way to do it. Because you have more chances of seeing the wildlife if you join the multi-day cruise. Because what we always say, and that's what we actually want to say to the tourist that wants to come up here, that it's not always a guarantee that you will see the wildlife. Especially polar bear, because Arctic is known for polar bears, but it's not a guarantee.
And I should mention that Cherry wrote an article for Amateur Traveler recently, which is actually how we connected. She pitched me an article and I pitched her a podcast. So she's doing this under duress, let's just say. But she wrote an article about the wildlife on Svalbard. And so about the polar bears and the Arctic foxes and the reindeer, for instance, are the three that come to the top of my mind, as well as the walruses, seals, and things like that, that are also the marine mammals in the area. And if I didn't do an expedition cruise and I wanted to have the best chance of seeing the wildlife, what am I going to do?
That you could do a boat trip, because if you join even just the short ones, again, it's not a guarantee, but you have a chance to see, you will have the chance.
Hence the wild in wildlife, right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, wildlife, yeah. We have the short ones, like what I've said earlier, the Isfjord Safari and the Glacier Safari. Yep. So if you join the Glacier Safari, along the way, you will see different species of birds. Along the way to the glacier, we have here Fulmar, Kiriwaki, and some puffins. And then if you're really lucky, then you might see the blue whale here. But you could also see some walruses and some seals along the way. And sometimes they just hang out by the glacier.
All right, then.
Yeah, cool. If you decide to join the Glacier Safari, I think this is the one that I could recommend, because the glaciers in Svalbard is different than anywhere else. It recedes slowly for many years before suddenly gaining rapid speed and then advancing many kilometers in the space of a few years. So this, so it's a process called surging, and then it creates a formation within the glacier that often then just calves into the sea.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. And then what I've said with the boat trips, so you could also go to Pyramiden and Barentsburg. And these two settlements, actually, this used to be one of the very popular excursions before Russia had this thing with the Ukraine, before the war. So this Pyramiden and Barentsburg trip used to be recommended. But now it's not advertised anymore, but there are still some few local companies that goes up there. So if you still want to do it, then you can still hop on a boat and go to Pyramiden or to Barentsburg. Because...
Well, the ignorant question, but how did the war in Ukraine affect the tourism in Svalbard?
Because
do you have a lot of Russian tourists?
Actually, it's the settlement itself, because Pyramiden and Barentsburg are both Russian settlements.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Got it.
Yeah, but Pyramiden is mostly already an abandoned town, so they call it a ghost town. So that's why people likes to go there and see the abandoned Russian mining town, because there are 1,000 people that lived in that small place before.
Okay.
And then it was just deserted mainly for economic reasons in the wake of the Soviet Union's dissolution. So that's why it got abandoned and everything was just left there. They still have their things. They just took all the people out and then that's it. So it has a very interesting history, and to see how they actually built those buildings and those facilities, it's just really amazing. So right now,
and it's a little further away, a little more remote community is my impression.
Yes, it's very far from Longyearbyen. It's on a boat trip. If you go there with a ribcage boat, it's faster than the normal boat. It's still 2 or 3 hours.
And I see the summer population is 6, all caretakers right now.
Yeah, 10 people in the summer, and then during winter, it's 5 people. They just take care of the buildings, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
And then Barentsburg, the other Russian settlement, actually, that is the only Russian settlement since Pyramiden was abandoned. And it is also a mining town, but there is a hotel and then few shops for the tourists that visit from Longyearbyen. But I'm not sure how many people is there right now, because most of them moved to Longyearbyen when the war started. So I don't have the numbers right now of how many people.
I'm seeing 455, but I don't know how. That's from a 2020 census.
Yeah, I think that that is before the war broke out. Yeah.
Yep, it is. It is indeed.
I think more than 75% already moved here to Longyearbyen.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
And we should say, when we talked about mining, I don't know that we said coal mining, although you mentioned a coal cart one time, so people were probably smart enough to pick that up. But
It's basically coal mining. I don't have much more information about coal mining. But
you have not yourself been a coal miner.
Yeah, no. Unfortunately. Many,
I'm not sure if that's it, unfortunately, but...
but if you hear the history of the Svalbard, it feels like it's a very unique kind of job. Being up here during those times, it feels, if you are really an adventurer, then you will be like, oh my God, I want to go there and be a miner just to see how it feels like to live in the Arctic.
Excellent. What else should we see while we're in Svalbard?
Yep, and then we've talked about boating and then hiking and going around town. We also have here different hotels. Okay, we have a lot of hotels here, so you have a lot of options for stays. We have Radisson up here. So if you wanted to have a little bit of fancier stay, then you could stay in Radisson. But we also have here some hostels or guest houses that is a little bit more affordable. And then we have some hotels here that are interesting, what we call coal miners' cabin. It's an accommodation that used to be used by the coal miners. So it's still the original building. Yeah. But of course, they do some maintenance. But yeah, Marianne's Polarig and the coal miners. And they are both around 1,500 Norwegian kroner, so I think it's $150. No, am I doing the math correctly? Because $1 is 10 Norwegian kroner. So, that's the price per night.
Got it.
If you want a fancier hotel, then of course, Radisson, we have that. We also have Svalbard Hotel. And then we have the most expensive one, which is Funken Lodge. And it's 3,800 per month, not per month, per night. I'm sorry.
Got it. And yeah, I would tend to think that places like this that are adventurous and a little off the beaten track are a little more expensive than, say, going to the Philippines per night or for meals and things like that as well.
Yes, it is, because everything here is imported. Right. Nothing grows up here except for moss and small flowers during the summer, but that's it. Everything is imported.
Excellent. What else should we tell people who are going to Svalbard?
There are some side trips that I could recommend. We have this another hotel. It's a boutique hotel. We call the Base Camp's Eastfjord Radio. And if you want to experience the luxury of living in a very remote location surrounded by wildlife right outside your window, then this is where you want to go. It's a little bit expensive. It's $650 per night, but that includes the boat trip. And then the one night stay with 3-course dinner and then the breakfast.
Got it.
So from here, yeah.
Up in the middle of nowhere.
It's in the west coast of Svalbard.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like
but with free Wi-Fi.
they actually do have Wi-Fi.
I know.
So I think we have the fastest Wi-Fi here in Svalbard. Anywhere else I go, the Wi-Fi is very slow.
That's funny.
Yeah. And so that's one of the side trips that I could recommend if you have the money and the time, because that will take at least 2 days out of your itinerary if you decide to go there.
And my impression from the pictures I'm seeing there is it's very rustic. Don't think infinity pools and things like that, but think wildlife viewing opportunities.
Yes, please. Yeah, not that luxurious like the infinity pool, but yeah, it's inspired by the traditional trapper's huts in the Arctic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rustic, warm, and just cozy kind of hotel.
Starting to wind down on this itinerary. Do you have anything else you wanted to add before we get to some of our wrap-up questions?
Okay. For the biggest surprise here, I think it's one of the questions that I wanted to address, is like, some people didn't think that Svalbard is a well-developed settlement, because other people think that it's really an expedition to go here, and they didn't know that it's a modern and very well-developed settlement with a lot of infrastructure and shops and restaurants, pubs,
good Wi-Fi.
Yes, good Wi-Fi, cinemas. It's just that it's the normal city, but you don't have all the options like in the normal city. So life here in Svalbard is very simple. You go to work in the morning and then you go home after, or if you want to socialize a bit, then you can go out and then you just go home again. And the thing is, you don't have all the other stress factors that you experience when you live in a normal city. Like here, we don't even have to lock our doors. You can leave your phone on the table in a restaurant and you can still find it there when you go back. So it's like those other stressful factors that you have to think about, like crimes and all that, you don't experience it here. That's why it's different, the feeling of connecting not only to the nature, but also to yourself.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. As we go to wrap this up, you're standing in the prettiest spot in Svalbard. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
I am standing in Plettafjellet. My most favorite spot, because you can see the whole town, the center, all the way up to the Nubien. And you have the view of the Adventfjorden. From there, you will see the whole settlement. And from the airport, you're not literally going to see the airport, but you see the way to the airport all the way to the other end. It's, for me, that is the beautiful spot. But of course, if you go out more, a little bit outside the settlement, there are a lot of other spots that I could really say that this is also one of my favorites, because even though it's all looks the same, it's just all mountains and all that, I know people will be like, what's the difference here? But how the mountains were formed and where you're at, if you're in a cabin, it has a different feeling and it has a different view. I don't know how to explain that, but it's just that it's, yeah.
I think you did a good job with that. Excellent. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Svalbard.
Only in Svalbard is you carry, okay, it's not, I don't know if it's something you laugh about, but it's you must carry a rifle when you go out of the town. Okay. So if you go outside the settlement, you have to carry a rifle because for your polar bear protection, because you don't know when it's going to, yeah. Yeah. And also, again, not locking the doors and leaving keys, car keys in a car. Those are the stuff that you could only find and experience in Longyearbyen. Not in anywhere else in the world, I think.
I've been places where we need to carry a rifle, but it was for the hippos. Or somebody had to go with us. Or there's certainly places in the U.S. where you have your rifle with you, but you leave your doors unlocked. So different environment. Excellent. And in terms of things that made you laugh, when you were talking about the seasons, I thought of my roommate from northern Vermont. He used to describe it as 11 months of winter and 1 month of poor sledding.
That's true. That is actually true. Because even now, outside my window, I don't know if I could make you see this, but here, we still have snow in the mountains.
We still have snow, and it's June 25th when we're recording this. So
yes. Yeah. Yep. And I
so
think,
when you say summer, it's a Svalbard summer. It doesn't mean I'm not going to see snow.
Yeah, it's Svalbard summer. The highest temperature, I think, is 10 during July. So we'll see.
This 10 July. Celsius?
Yeah, 10 Celsius, yeah.
Okay. That's a little warmer than 10 Fahrenheit. Excellent. And if you had to summarize Svalbard in just 3 words, what 3 words would you use?
I prepared a quote, actually, to end this, just a summary. It's a quote from Christiana Ritter. She is an Austrian writer, and she is best known for her book, A Woman in the Polar Night. It's about her stay in Svalbard in 1933. Okay. And she says, "The Arctic does not yield its secret for the price of a ship's ticket. You must live through the long night, the storms, and the destruction of human pride. You must have gazed on the deadness of all things to grasp their livingness."
I think you topped the 3 words. If you want to come up with 3 words, it's okay. Otherwise, we can call that done.
I still cannot think about 3 words. Okay, majestic, unique, and oh yeah, I still can't think of the 3 words because
we could throw in Arctic or we could throw in wildlife as you decide.
It's excellent. Just that it's hard to summarize how truly it feels how to live in this settled in Svalbard. It's very different. Yeah,
our guest has been Cherry Gonzalez from itscherrygonzalez.com. And Cherry, if we wanted to send people to your best post on Svalbard, where are we going to send them?
You can go to itscherrygonzalez.com and you can check my article about the Arctic adventure essentials and what to prepare so that you the next time, or if you've decided to visit us up here, then you know what to bring and what not to bring.
Excellent. And I didn't say, you mentioned carrying a rifle in case you have a polar bear encounter. Do you have a memorable polar bear encounter story that you want to share with us?
Most of my polar bear encounters are good thing. I'm in a boat, so it's just
excellent. From an appropriate distance.
Yes. Yeah. And actually, we are not really allowed to go near the polar bear. If you are on a sightseeing tour, the guide will be in a proper distance from the wildlife. But we actually did have an instance here where it's very unfortunate, but we have a polar bear attack near the airport, and one of the campers actually died from there. But that is nobody really...
This is
really...
why we respect the distance that we need to keep away from
exactly.
a polar bear. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They are majestic and powerful animals. So...
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And very strong.
Yep. Cherry, thanks so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your obvious love for Svalbard.
Thank you again, Chris, for having me.
Thanks again to the patrons of the show who help support Amateur Traveler financially. And special thanks this week to Amy Werble, or Verble, not sure how to pronounce it, Amy, who became the latest patron of the show. If you're interested in supporting Amateur Traveler, getting the show early with an ad-free version and a monthly Zoom call, then go to patreon.com/amateurtraveler. I heard this week from Veronica, who has a request. She says, I'm a regular listener of your podcast. We are going to Bormio and Livigno in Italy for a ski trip in February, and I'd love to learn more about the region before we go. I looked through your website and couldn't find anything on the area. Apparently, they are hosting the 2026 Winter Olympics there. Anyway, just a podcast suggestion. They have natural hot springs there as well and are famous for their hearty buckwheat pasta, cabbage and cheese dish, bisoccheri, or something like that. Thanks, Veronica. Veronica, I do not have an episode like that, as you found out, but I want to put out the invitation there that if you know someone who would be a great guest to have on the show to talk about that region of Italy, let me know and we can make Veronica happy. I also heard from Simon, who talked about the Azerbaijan episode. Hi, Chris. I really enjoyed your recent podcast on Azerbaijan. Your guest really took us to places we hadn't thought of on our visit a few years ago. We were there long before COVID and arrived in Baku by the night train, getting into the capital city about 5 a.m. Our main problem was finding our way around. This was partly our own lack of maps or useful mobile phone, but also a lack of signage for CBD, city center, or even old city. We wandered for hours, basically until shops opened, trying to find the main center of Baku. And this feeling of being lost got even worse when we did eventually find the old city, which is stunning, as your guest described. Our aim was to find a tea room someone had recommended, but with no actual street addresses in the old city, we were searching for a decorative wooden door in a small street off the main street towards the bottom of the city. That was a quote there. We think we found it in the end and can confirm your guest Emily's findings. Tea in Azerbaijan is mainly for men. My wife was the only woman in the dark basement room we found ourselves in. Tea for us was served not with jam, as Emily suggested, but with pieces of chocolate, I guess serving the same function. I'd recommend the place, but with no street address, I'd only be able to say wooden door, small street, bottom of the city. Many thanks again for the podcast, which constantly seems to trigger memories of our past travels, as well as inspiring us to future trips. Simon. Thanks so much, Simon, for sharing that. And I know what you mean. Azerbaijan has gone up towards the top in terms of places I'd like to get to because of that episode. With that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send me an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening.